Chapter 6 The Costs of Circulation Section 1 Genuine Costs of Circulation A. The Time of Purchase and Sale The transformations of the forms of capital from commodities into money and from money into commodities are at the same time transactions of the capitalist, acts of purchase and sale. The time in which these transformations of forms take place constitutes subjectively, from the standpoint of the capitalist, the time of purchase and sale. It is the time during which he performs the functions of a seller and a buyer in the market. Just as the time of circulation of capital is a necessary segment of its time of reproduction, so the time in which the capitalist buys and sells and scours the market is a necessary part of the time in which he functions as a capitalist, that is, as personified capital. It is a part of his business hours. Since we have assumed that commodities are bought and sold at their values, these acts constitute merely the conversion of a certain value from one form into another, from the commodity form into the money form, or from the money form into the commodity form, a change in the state of being. If commodities are sold at their values, then the magnitudes of value in the hands of the buyer and seller remain unchanged. Only the form of existence of value is changed. If the commodities are not sold at their values, then the sum of the converted values remains unchanged. The plus on one side is a minus on the other. The metamorphoses, commodity to money and money to commodity, are transactions between buyers and sellers. They require time to conclude bargains, the more so as the struggle goes on in which each seeks to get the best of the other, and it is businessmen who face one another here. And, a quote, when Greek meets Greek, then comes the tug of war, unquote. A paraphrase of words from the 17th century tragedy The Rival Queens, or The Death of Alexander the Great, by Nathaniel Lee. To effect a change in the state of being costs time and labour power, not for the purpose of creating value, however, but in order to accomplish the conversion of value from one form into another. The mutual attempt to appropriate an extra slice of this value on this occasion changes nothing. This labour, increased by the evil designs on either side, creates no value, any more than the work performed in a judicial proceeding increases the value of the subject matter of the suit. Matters stand with this labour, which is a necessary element in the capitalist process of production as a whole, including circulation or included by it, as they stand, say, with the work of combustion of some substance used for the generation of heat. This work of combustion does not generate any heat, although it is a necessary element in the process of combustion. In order, for example, to consume coal as a fuel, I must combine it with oxygen, and for this purpose must transform it from the solid into the gaseous state. For in the carbonic acid gas, the result of the combustion, coal is in the gaseous state. Consequently, I must bring about a physical change in the form of its existence or in its state of being. The separation of carbon molecules which are united into a solid mass and the splitting up of these molecules into their separate atoms must precede the new combination, and this requires a certain expenditure of energy, which thus is not transformed into heat, but taken from it. Therefore, if the owners of the commodities are not capitalists, but independent direct producers, the time employed in buying and selling is a diminution of their labour time, and for this reason such transactions used to be deferred, in ancient and medieval times, to holidays. Of course, The dimensions assumed by the conversion of commodities in the hands of the capitalists cannot transform this labour, which does not create any value, into labour productive of value. Nor can the miracle of this transubstantiation be accomplished by a transposition, that is, by the industrial capitalist making this work of combustion the exclusive business of third persons who are paid by them, instead of performing it themselves. These third persons will, of course, not tender their labour power to the capitalist out of sheer love for them. It is a matter of indifference to the rent collector of a real estate owner, or the messenger of a bank, that their labour does not add one iota or tittle to the value of either the rent or the gold pieces carried to another bank by the bagful. To the capitalist who has others working for him, buying and selling becomes a primary function. Since he appropriates the product of many on a large social scale, he must sell it on the same scale and then reconvert it from money into elements of production. Now, as before, neither the time of purchase nor of sale creates any value. The function of merchant's capital gives rise to an illusion. But without going into this at length here, this much is plain from the start. If, by a division of labour, a function, unproductive in itself, although a necessary element of reproduction, is transformed from an incidental occupation of many into an exclusive occupation of a few, into their special business, the nature of this function itself is not changed. One merchant, here considered a mere agent attending to the change of form of commodities, a mere buyer and seller, may by his operations shorten the time of purchase and sale for many producers. In such case, he should be regarded as a machine which reduces useless expenditure of energy or helps to set production time free. Footnote. Quote, "The costs of commerce, although necessary, must be regarded as an onerous outlay." Unquote. Quesne, Analyse du tableau économique, in Der Physiocrate, Part 1, Paris, 1846. According to Quesne, the profit which the competition among merchants produces, in that it compels them to content themselves with a smaller reward or gain, is, strictly speaking, nothing but a prevention of loss, privation de perte, for the seller at first hand and for the buyer-consumer. Now, a prevention of loss on the costs of commerce is not a real product or an accession of wealth through commerce, if considered simply as an exchange, whether with or without the cost of transportation. The costs of commerce are always paid by those who sell the products, and who would enjoy the full prices paid for them by the buyers if there were no intermediate expenses. The proprietors and producers are salariants, payers of wages. The merchants are salariés, recipients of wages. Quesne, Dialogue sur le commerce et sur les travaux des artisans. In Der Physiocrate, Part 1, Paris, 1846. End of footnote. In order to simplify the matter, since we shall not discuss the merchant as a capitalist and merchant's capital until later, we shall assume that this buying and selling agent is a man who sells his labour. He expends his labour power and labour time in the operations commodity to money and money to commodity. And he makes his living that way, just as another does by spinning or making pills. He performs a necessary function, because the process of reproduction itself includes unproductive functions. He works as well as the next man, but intrinsically his labour creates neither value nor product. He belongs himself to the incidentals of production. His usefulness does not consist in transforming an unproductive function into a productive one, nor unproductive into productive labour. It would be a miracle if such transformation could be accomplished by the mere transfer of a function. His usefulness consists, rather, in the fact that a smaller part of society's labour power and labour time is tied up in this unproductive function. More, we shall assume that he is a mere wage labourer, even one of the better paid, for all the difference it makes. Whatever his pay, as a wage labourer he works part of his time for nothing. He may receive daily the value of the product of 8 working hours, yet functions 10. But the 2 hours of surplus labour he performs do not produce value any more than his 8 hours of necessary labour, although by means of the latter a part of the social product is transferred to him. In the first place, looking at it from the standpoint of society, labour power is used up now as before for 10 hours in a mere function of circulation. It cannot be used for anything else, not for productive labour. In the second place, however, society does not pay for those 2 hours of surplus labour, although they are spent by the individual who performs this labour. Society does not appropriate any extra product or value thereby, but the costs of circulation which he represents are reduced by 1/5, from 10 hours to 8. Society does not pay any equivalent for 1/5 of this active time of circulation of which he is the agent. But if this man is employed by a capitalist, then the non-payment of these 2 hours reduces the cost of circulation of his capital, which constitutes a deduction from his income. For the capitalist, this is a positive gain, because the negative limit for the self-expansion of his capital value is thereby reduced. So long as small independent producers of commodities spend a part of their own time in buying and selling, this represents nothing but time spent during the intervals between their productive function or diminution of their time of production. At all events, the time consumed for this purpose constitutes one of the costs of circulation, which adds nothing to the converted values. It is the cost of converting them from the commodity form into the money form. The capitalist producer of commodities acting as an agent of circulation differs from the direct producer of commodities only in the fact that he buys and sells on a larger scale, and therefore his function as such agent assumes greater dimensions. And if the volume of his business compels or enables him to buy, hire, circulation agents of his own to serve as wage labourers, the nature of the case is not changed thereby. A certain amount of labour power and labour time must be expended in the process of circulation, so far as it is merely a change of form. But this now appears as an additional investment of capital. A part of the variable capital must be laid out in the purchase of this labour power functioning only in circulation. This advance capital creates neither product nor value. It reduces pro tanto to such an extent the dimensions in which the advanced capital functions productively. It is as though one part of the product were transformed into a machine which buys and sells the rest of the product. This machine brings about a reduction of the product. It does not participate in the productive process, although it can diminish the labour power, etc., spent on circulation. It constitutes merely a part of the costs of circulation. Section 1b. Bookkeeping. Apart from the actual buying and selling, labour time is expended on bookkeeping, which besides absorbs materialised labour, such as pens, ink, paper, desks, office paraphernalia. This function, therefore, exacts the expenditure on the one hand of labour power, and on the other of instruments of labour. It is the same condition of things as obtained in the case of the time of purchase and sale. As unity within its circuits, as value in motion, whether in the sphere of production or in either phase of the sphere of circulation, Capital exists ideally only in the form of money of account, primarily in the mind of the producer of commodities, the capitalist producer of commodities. This movement is fixed and controlled by bookkeeping, which includes the determination of prices or the calculation of the prices of commodities. The movement of production, especially of the production of surplus value, in which the commodities figure only as depositories of value, as the names of things whose ideal existence as values is crystallized in money of account, thus is symbolically reflected in imagination. So long as the individual producer of commodities keeps account only in his head, for instance a peasant, the bookkeeping tenant farmer was not produced until the rise of capitalist agriculture, or books his expenditures, receipts, due dates of payments, etc., only incidentally outside of his production time, it is palpably clear that this function and the instruments of labour consumed by it, such as paper, etc., represent additional consumption of labour time and instruments, which are necessary, but constitute a deduction from the time available for productive consumption, as well as from the instruments of labour, which functions, in the real process of production, enter into the creation of products and value. Footnote. In the Middle Ages, we find bookkeeping for agriculture only in the monasteries, but we have seen in Volume 1 that a bookkeeper was installed for agriculture as early as the primitive Indian communities. Bookkeeping is there made the independent and exclusive function of the communal officer. This division of labour saves time, effort, and expense, but production and bookkeeping in the sphere of production remain as much two different things as the cargo of a ship and the bill of lading. In the person of the bookkeeper, a part of the labour power of the community is withdrawn from production, and the costs of his function are not made good by his own labour, but by a deduction from the communal product. What is true of the bookkeeper of an Indian community is true, mutatis mutandis, with necessary changes, of the bookkeeper of the capitalist. The nature of the function is not changed, neither by the dimensions which it assumes on account of its concentration in the hands of the capitalist producer of commodities, and the fact that instead of appearing as the function of many small commodity producers, it appears as the function of one capitalist, as a function within a process of large-scale production, nor is it altered by its divorcement from those productive functions of which it formed an appendage, nor by its conversion into an independent function of special agents, exclusively entrusted with it. Division of labour and assumption of independence do not make a function one that creates products and value, if it was not so intrinsically, hence before it became independent. If a capitalist invests his capital anew, he must invest a part of it in hiring a bookkeeper, etc., and in the wherewithal of bookkeeping. If his capital is already functioning, is engaged in the process of its own constant reproduction, he must continually reconvert a part of his product into a bookkeeper, clerks, and the like, by transforming that part into money. That part of his capital is withdrawn from the process of production, and belongs in the costs of circulation, deductions from the total yield, including the labour power itself, that is expended exclusively for this function. But there is a certain difference between the costs incidental to bookkeeping, or the unproductive expenditure of labour time on the one hand, and those of mere buying and selling time on the other. The latter arise only from the definite social form of the process of production, from the fact that it is the process of production of commodities. Bookkeeping, as the control and ideal synthesis of the process, becomes the more necessary the more the process assumes a social scale and loses its purely individual character. It is therefore more necessary in capitalist production than in the scattered production of handicraft and peasant economy, more necessary in collective production than in capitalist production. But the costs of bookkeeping drop as production becomes concentrated and bookkeeping becomes social. We are concerned here only with the general character of the costs of circulation, which arise out of the metamorphosis of forms alone. It is superfluous to discuss here all their forms in detail. But how forms, which belong in the sphere of pure changes of the form of value, and hence originate from the particular social form of the process of production, forms which in the case of the individual commodity producer are only transient, barely perceptible elements, run alongside his productive functions, or become intertwined with them, how these can strike the eye as the huge cost of circulation can be seen from just the money taken in and paid out when these operations have become independent and concentrated on a large scale, as the exclusive function of banks, etc., or of cashiers in individual businesses. But it must be firmly borne in mind that these costs of circulation are not changed in character by their change in appearance. Section 1C. Money. Whether a product is fabricated as a commodity or not, it is always a material form of wealth, a use value intended for individual or productive consumption. Its value as a commodity is ideally expressed in its price, which does not change its actual use form in the least. But the fact that certain commodities like gold and silver function as money, and as such reside exclusively in the process of circulation, even in the form of hoards, reserve funds, etc., they remain in the sphere of circulation, although latently, is a pure product of the particular social form of the process of production, the process of production of commodities. Since, under capitalist production, products assume the general form of commodities, and the overwhelming mass of products is created as commodities and must therefore assume the form of money, and since the vast bulk of commodities, the part of social wealth functioning as commodities, grows continually, it follows that the quantity of gold and silver functioning as means of circulation, paying medium, reserve fund, etc., likewise increases. These commodities, performing the function of money, enter into neither individual nor productive consumption. They represent social labor in a fixed form, in which it serves as a mere circulation machine. Besides the fact that a part of social wealth has been condemned to assume this unproductive form, the wearing down of the money demands its constant replacement, or the conversion of more social labor in the form of products into more gold and silver. These replacement costs are considerable in capitalistically developed nations, because in general the portion of wealth tied up in the form of money is tremendous. Gold and silver as money commodities mean circulation costs to society, which arise solely out of the social form of production. They are incidentals of commodity production in general, and they increase with the development of this production, especially of capitalist production. They represent a part of the social wealth that must be sacrificed to the process of circulation. Quote, "The money circulating in a country is a certain portion of the capital of the country, absolutely withdrawn from productive purposes, in order to facilitate or increase the productiveness of the remainder. A certain amount of wealth is, therefore, as necessary in order to adopt gold as a circulating medium, as it is to make a machine in order to facilitate any other production." Unquote. Economist, Volume 5.